Welcome everyone, I'm Korn, and this is Herman. We're here to walk you through a very important guide, the Israel Wartime Readiness Field Guide.
This isn't just another document, it's a lifeline, built on the official guidance from the Homefront Command.
Exactly. Our aim here is to help you feel prepared, not panicked. This guide is designed to be a practical, step-by-step tool to help you and your loved ones navigate emergency situations with confidence. We'll cover everything from the basics of preparing your home to what to do when sirens sound.
Think of it as your personal readiness co-pilot. It's for every civilian in Israel, whether you're new to the country or have lived here your whole life.
And we're going to make it easy to understand, breaking down complex information into simple, actionable steps. No jargon, just clear, direct advice. Let's start with how to get the most out of this guide itself.
Preparation is key. This isn't something you want to be figuring out when an emergency is already unfolding.
Absolutely. So before you need it, before any sirens or escalations, let's get this checklist ready. First things first, print multiple copies. And if you can, use durable paper or even laminate them. They need to withstand a bit of wear and tear.
This is a critical step. Once you have your copies, affix a strip of reflective tape to the cover or the top edge.
Oh, that's clever. Why reflective tape, Herman?
Because if the power goes out and you're searching with a flashlight or a torch in the dark, that reflective strip will make it instantly visible. You won't be fumbling around when time is short.
Good point. Every second counts. After that, bind or staple the pages together. A simple document folder or even a plastic sleeve works well. The goal is to have a single, grab-and-go item, not a stack of loose pages that could scatter.
You need at least 3 copies of this guide. One should be on your fridge or right by your front door. That's your working copy, the one you'll grab first.
And the second copy should go into your go bag. We'll talk more about go bags later, but for now, just know it's for when you might need to leave quickly.
The third copy needs to be in your Mamad. That's your apartment's protected space, or whatever protected space you use most often.
Having it right there means you don't have to expose yourself to risk by going to another part of the house to retrieve it during an emergency.
And don't just set it and forget it. Review this guide regularly. If anything changes, like new Homefront Command updates, or if your supplies expire, or if your designated shelter location shifts, reprint and update your copies.
That's a great reminder. This isn't a static document, it's a living guide that needs to evolve with your situation and with official guidance. Now, let's talk about how to actually run through these checklists when the time comes.
We highly recommend the two-person method.
This is a technique used in aviation and by the military for a reason. It's incredibly effective at catching things that a single person might miss. One person reads each item aloud, clearly.
The other person physically verifies that item and responds. They might say, check, done, or not yet.
And you can switch roles periodically to avoid fatigue. It keeps both people engaged and accountable. But what if someone is alone, Herman?
If you're alone, still read each item aloud to yourself. Physically verify it before you move on to the next. The act of speaking it and then physically confirming helps cement the information and the action.
That makes sense. It turns it into more than just reading. It becomes an active process. Now, we have different types of checklists in this guide, and they're meant to be run at different times.
The full master checklist, which you'll find in section 3, should be run at the start of any significant escalation or war. It's also important to go through it after returning home from an evacuation and weekly during any sustained conflict.
Then there's something we call the S, quick smoke test. Pause. Beds. That's what we're going to dive into next. This one is for much more frequent checks.
You should run the PAWS BED quick check daily during wartime, weekly during periods of elevated tension, and at least monthly during routine times. This one is designed to be very fast.
And finally, we have POR, situational checklists, in section 4. These are specific to certain scenarios, and you should run them every single time a relevant situation arises, whether it's during wartime or just an escalation.
One more thing before we move on. Throughout this guide, you'll notice some items marked with a special symbol.
That's right. A little warning triangle.
Those items are critical. Do not skip them under any circumstances. They are essential for your safety and the safety of those around you.
Consider them non-negotiable. All right, Herman, let's get into that quick smoke test you mentioned. PAWSB Ed. This is a fantastic little routine that can be completed in under 2 minutes. It's designed to give you a rapid readiness check.
It's a simple mnemonic, pause BAWS BAED. Think of it as, check your pause before BED.
I like that. It's easy to remember. So, let's break down each letter. The P in PAWS BAED stands for phone.
Verify that your phone is on, fully charged, and that the Homefront Command, or HFC, app is running. Crucially, confirm that you have the correct alert area selected in the app. This one is critical. If your alert area is wrong, you might not get the warnings you need.
So important. You want those alerts to be relevant to your location. Next up, the AA is for alerts.
Check that your wireless emergency alerts are enabled on your phone. And this is important. Verify that your Do Not Disturb settings are overridden for emergency alerts. You don't want to miss a siren because your phone is on silent.
That's a common oversight people make. Make sure those critical alerts can cut through. The WW is for SH water.
Confirm you have at least a 72-hour supply of drinking water accessible, and check the expiration dates. Water doesn't go bad, but the plastic bottles can degrade over time, affecting taste or quality.
Good to know. Don't just assume it's good. C's is for shelters.
Know where your nearest 3 shelters are. And don't just know their location. Confirm that the routes to them are walkable, clear, and safe. This one is critical. Time is of the essence when an alert sounds.
Knowing your routes beforehand can make all the difference. The B's in POWS, BED is for W's.
Your go bag. Make sure it's by the door, zipped, and ready, and briefly verify its contents. You don't need to unpack it every time, but a quick visual check that it's complete is wise.
Just a quick glance to make sure everything seems in order. Then we have E for exits.
Check that your hallway is clear of obstructions, and confirm that your front door or any primary exit can be unlocked quickly. No fumbling with multiple locks or stuck bolts.
You want a swift, unimpeded exit if you need it. And finally, D for dependents.
This means all household members. Verify that everyone is present or accounted for. This includes children, elderly family members, or anyone else living with you.
So, to recap that quick check, passes, passes, is asses, is gipas, aches, helter, bazig, zikitz, zipas, dikit, zipas, basbi, edes. It's such an easy way to quickly assess your immediate readiness.
It takes less than 2 minutes, and it provides a vital sense of security that you're prepared for the immediate.
Exactly. And that feeling of preparedness, even for the smallest things, can make a huge difference in how you respond during a real emergency. We've covered how to prepare this guide itself, how to use it with the two-person method, and introduced the essential PAWS-BED quick check.
Remember, consistent, simple actions are what build true readiness.
Right. In our next chapter, we'll dive deeper into preparing your home and family, including creating your personal emergency plan. Until then, take a moment to get your copies of this guide ready, and maybe even run your first poor us bed check. Stay safe and stay prepared. Welcome back, everyone. In this chapter, we're diving into the master checklist. Think of it as your essential guide to getting everything in order, making sure you're prepared for whatever comes your way. We'll cover everything from your tech to your home environment, your go bag, and even how to look after your loved ones and yourself.
This is where we get down to brass tacks. No fluff, just what you need to know to keep yourself and your family safe. We'll go through it item by item.
Exactly. It might seem like a lot at first, but we'll break it down into manageable chunks. Let's start with your technical systems and alerts.
First up, your smartphone. This one is critical. Make sure it's always on your person or you know exactly where it is. And check that battery level. Is it okay or should it be charging, especially overnight?
Good point, Herman. You don't want to be caught with a dead phone when you need it most.
Not at all. And while we're on smartphones, let's talk configuration. Your phone needs to be powered on. DND, or Do Not Disturb, is usually fine, but airplane mode is not. You need to be able to receive alerts.
Right, because airplane mode cuts off all your signals, including emergency alerts.
Precisely. Also, make sure your location services are enabled. This can be vital for emergency responders to find you if necessary.
And then there's the Homefront Command app.
Yes, the Homefront Command app. This is critical. Make sure it's installed, configured correctly. You can find detailed instructions in Appendix A of the guide and that it's running. Crucially, validate that the correct alert area is set for your location.
That's how you get those life-saving red alert notifications.
Absolutely. And speaking of alerts, ensure your emergency wireless alerts are activated. Specifically, check that extreme threats are set to alert you. You don't want to miss those.
So, what about computers?
For your computer, if you use one, ensure any Red Alert app or browser extension is active and set to your correct location. Test it and validate that it's working properly. This is a good backup for your phone.
Great. Now that our tech is sorted, let's move into your home environment. This is about making your immediate living space as safe and prepared as possible.
And some of these are critical, starting with water. You need a 72-hour supply ready and accessible. We recommend calculating 3 liters per person per day. And remember to resupply it when necessary. This isn't a one-time check.
3 liters per person per day for 3 days. That's a good amount to keep on hand.
Next, food. This is also critical. Your pantry goods should be stocked and resupplied as needed. Think non-perishable items you can eat without cooking.
Canned goods, dried fruit, granola bars, things like that.
Exactly. Then, a torch. Make sure it's accessible. A hand crank torch is excellent because it doesn't rely on batteries, but if you have a battery-powered one, ensure you have reserve batteries.
A little bit of light can make a big difference in a power outage.
It can. Now, the hallway. This is critical. Keep it clear. No obstructions. Your escape route needs to be open.
You don't want to trip over shoes or boxes when you're trying to move quickly to your mamad or an exit.
Not at all. Next, a fire extinguisher. Make sure it's accessible and that you have smoke detectors installed and tested regularly.
Safety first, always.
Absolutely. And think about heavy furniture. Bookcases and shelves should be secured to walls. If your appliances have wheels, make sure they're locked. Heavy objects should be stored low, not above head height, to prevent them from falling during a tremor or blast.
That's a smart tip I hadn't thought of.
Moving on, gas and electricity. This is critical. All household members need to know the shut-off locations and, crucially, how and when to shut them off.
That's vital for preventing fires or other dangers if lines are damaged.
It is. Next, escape routes. Identify your primary exit and a secondary exit. That could be a back door, a porch, or emergency stairs. And ensure both routes are clear of obstacles.
Just like the hallway, you need a clear path out.
Yes. And if you have a baby, make sure your baby carrier is by the front door, ready to go.
Oh, good thinking. One less thing to grab in a hurry.
Finally, your mamad. That's your apartment's protected space. Ensure it's prepared. Appendix C of the guide has a detailed mamad inspection checklist. Do not skip that.
The mamad is your sanctuary, so it's worth making sure it's ready. All right, Herman, off to the home environment. What's next?
Next up is your go bag. This is your lifeline if you need to leave your home quickly.
This is one of those things you prepare before as you need it.
Exactly. First, the bag itself. This is critical. It needs to be prepared by the door and zipped or sealed. You don't want to be fumbling with it when time is short. Section 5.1 in the guide offers advice on choosing the right bag.
So, what goes inside this critical bag?
The basic contents are critical. First, a phone charger and cable. Make sure they're packed. Then, a power bank. This should be packed, and its charge level verified. Charge it overnight if it's low.
So you can keep your phone alive even if the power is out.
Correct. Next, medications. Your essential meds need to be packed. And check your supply regularly. Replenish them when possible and necessary. Don't run out.
Very important, especially for ongoing conditions.
Then, a torch. Make sure it's inside the bag and charged, and N95 masks. Pack one per person.
For dust, smoke, or other airborne particles.
Yes, now some additional contents you might want to consider. An emergency whistle. Pack one. An AM/FM radio packed with good batteries or a full charge. A first aid kit packed and fully supplied. And a travel router, if you have one, can be very useful for connectivity.
Those are excellent additions for extra preparedness. What about items for potential overnight stays in public shelters?
These are per preference, but can make a long night more comfortable. Religious effects, if they're important to you, like a sitter or tefillin, pack them. Food and drink for longer stays. eye masks and earplugs if you need to sleep in a noisy, lit environment.
Comfort items can really help maintain morale.
They can. Also consider beer or wine openers, water bottles, umbrellas, and if you're really thinking about connectivity, a travel router with an Ethernet cable and AC supply. Plug adapters or splitters can also be useful. And for more extensive shelter stays, a small tent or blanket.
Oh, a tent. That's thinking ahead.
For travel documents, again, per preference. Passports, packed and validated for their expiry dates. Some cash on hand or packed. National IDs, and any other travel documents you might need.
So, it's about having everything you might need to leave quickly and comfortably for a period of time.
Exactly. Next up, people and dependents.
This is the most important part, isn't it? Our loved ones.
Absolutely. This is critical. All household members must be either present or accounted for and contactable. Know where everyone is.
So, whether they're home with you, or you know they're safe somewhere else, and you can reach them.
That's right. And for babies and young children, there are specific critical items.
Of course. Their needs are so particular.
Yes. Essential supplies need to be packed in the go bag. Diapers, wipes, a pacifier, formula, a bottle, and a changing mat, plus something for privacy if you need to change them in a public space.
All the baby essentials.
And then, getting them ready to go. This is critical. Make sure they are clothed, or their clothes are by their bed. Have baby wear by the door. Ensure they are fed if needed, and cleaned if needed.
So, minimal fuss if you have to grab them and go.
That's the idea. Now, let's talk about the person and personal effects. This is about you.
Looking after yourself in an emergency is important, too.
It is. Clothing is critical. During the daytime, be dressed for the weather. At night, have clothes by your door, by your bed, or simply sleep in appropriate clothing.
Don't be caught in your pajamas if you need to run to the mamad.
Exactly. Footwear is also critical. During the day, wear closed-toe footwear. At night, have closed-toe footwear by your door or by your bed.
No bare feet or flip-flops when you need to move quickly, or if there's debris.
Precisely. Keys are critical. Have them on your person or by the door. You don't want to be locked out or unable to secure your home if you need to leave.
That's a simple but crucial detail.
Your wallet. Keep it handy. Meds, if you take them, ensure they're taken on schedule. Rest. Take it when possible.
Self-care is important for maintaining your ability to respond.
It is. Hygiene. Shower as soon as possible, brush your teeth, and generally tend to your hygiene. And toilet visits, take them as soon as possible. These things keep you feeling human and functioning.
All those little things that become big things when you're under stress.
They add up. Finally, situational awareness. This is about staying informed and ready.
Knowing what's happening around you.
Yes. For news updates, scan them every 1 to 3 hours, prioritizing official and government sources. Don't rely solely on social media.
Stick to the trusted sources for accurate information.
Always. Make sure you know your alerting area. This should be validated regularly.
That's what we talked about with the Homefront Command app.
Correct. For public shelters, know your nearest 3 shelters. Verify their accessibility, check if they are open, note their hours, and time your exit to them. Agree on the procedure with your household members. Do this once per emergency.
It's good to have options and know the route.
And, for the Homefront Command app, check it once per day during emergencies or wars to familiarize yourself with current advice.
They often update their guidance.
They do. And finally, supply maintenance. Your water and food supplies should be replaced every 3 months. Batteries and electronics should be checked every 6 months.
So, it's not just a one-and-done checklist. It's an ongoing process.
Exactly. Regular maintenance keeps you ready.
Wow, Herman. That was a lot of vital information. Thank you for walking us through the master checklist. It really brings home the importance of being prepared.
This isn't just a list. It's a framework for safety. Take it seriously.
Right. So, to recap, we've covered making sure your smartphone and other tech are configured for alerts, securing your home environment with water, food, and clear escape routes, packing a comprehensive go bag for every family member, accounting for all dependents, taking care of your personal needs, and staying informed with reliable sources.
And doing it all regularly. This is not a one-time thing.
Absolutely. It's about building habits that keep you safe and resilient. In our next chapter, we'll dive deeper into specific items, like choosing your go bag and what exactly goes into it. But for now, take some time to review this master checklist and start putting these actions into practice. You'll feel much more secure once you do. Welcome back, everyone. This is Chapter 3, and we're going to dive into something really practical today, situational checklists. Think of these as quick mental scans or physical checks you do throughout your day, depending on what you're doing. They help you stay ready no matter what.
That's right. These aren't just suggestions. They're habits that can make a real difference in how quickly and safely you respond. We'll cover what to do during the day after you've been to a shelter, before you shower, before bed, and even before you leave your home.
Exactly. It's about building a rhythm of readiness into your routine. So, let's start with your daytime posture at home during wartime.
This is your quick status check. You should run through these points after you wake up, and really, any time your routine gets disrupted. It's about making sure you're always prepared, even when you're just moving around your own home.
First up, let's talk about your phone.
This one is critical. Is your phone on your person's, or at least within arm's reach? Is it charged sta, or actively charging? And make sure the HFC app, that's the Homefront Command app, is running in the background. It's your direct link to alerts.
Then, there's your clothing.
Also critical, you need to be fully clothed. And this is important, closed-toe shoes on one. We're not talking about slippers or going barefoot. You need something sturdy on your feet that you can move quickly in.
And your keys?
Critical. Your keys should be on your persons, or right in the door, or immediately by the door. You don't want to be fumbling for them in an emergency.
Your go bag. Remember we talked about that in the last chapter?
Critical. Your go bag needs to be by the doors, and zipped up. Don't leave it open with things falling out. It should be ready to grab and go.
And your exit route.
Critical again. Make sure your hallway is clear, no obstacles you could trip over. And your F front doors needs to be able to be opened quickly. Don't double lock it if it means fumbling with keys under pressure.
Finally, if you're working at a computer, consider a browser alert.
Yes, if you're at a desk, make sure the red alert extension is active on your computer. It can give you an additional warning.
That's your basic daytime posture. Now, let's talk about working from home during wartime. It's a bit different, isn't it?
It is. You'll have periods of calm, gaps between alerts where you can be productive, and you should use those. But you absolutely cannot let work compromise your readiness.
Right. It's easy to get absorbed in work and forget the situation.
First, and this goes back to what we just said, stay dressed and shoe-dust. Don't put on your pajamas just because you're just at the desk. You need to be ready to move.
And your go bag?
Keep your go bag right by the doors. Don't move it aside to make more room for your desk or anything else. Its place is by the door.
What about headphones, especially if you're on calls?
If you're using headphones, use only one ears, or keep the volume low enough that you can clearly hear a siren. Open back headphones or even just using your computer speakers are better than noise, canceling earbuds that block out everything.
That makes sense. You need to hear what's happening around you. Now, if you're on video calls with people outside of Israel, or who might not understand the situation, it's good to give them a heads up.
Yes, at the start of any meeting with people who aren't in your immediate security situation, briefly state what's happening. A good message to use is, I'm currently in an active alert zone in Israel. I may need to leave this call abruptly if a siren sounds. I'll rejoin as soon as it's safe.
That's clear and concise. And what about your team or manager?
You should notify them once at the start of the escalation. A good message to send is, letting you know that we're under active rocket alerts in my area. I'm working from home but may go offline without warning during sirens. I'll update you when I can. Please don't wait on me for time-sensitive decisions during this period.
That helps manage expectations.
Exactly. And always save your work frequently. You might need to abandon your desk mid-sentence.
And this last point is really important for your mindset.
Do not use the security situation as background noise. If you find yourself ignoring alerts or not reacting to sirens because you're too focused on work, you need to stop working and reset your posture. Your safety comes first.
Absolutely. Your work can wait. Your life cannot. So that covers your daytime at-home posture and working from home. Now, let's talk about what to do after returning from a shelter. This is a critical time for resetting.
It is. You run this checklist immediately after the all clear. The whole goal here is to restore your full readiness before the next alert. This is where preparation can degrade, because you naturally want to relax. Resist that urge.
First up, your go bag.
Critical. Get your go bag back by the doors and re-zip it. Did anything fall out or get removed while you were in the shelter? Put it back now. Don't leave it scattered.
And your phone. And your phone.
Critical. Put it on charge if the battery dropped at all, and make sure the HFC app is still running.
Your power bank.
Put your power bank on charge. You might have used it in the shelter to keep your phone going.
And water.
A3, supply your waters. If you drank from your emergency stock, you need to replenish those supplies.
Clothes and shoes.
Make sure they are back in positions. By your bed if it's nighttime, or on your person if it's daytime, ready to go.
Your torch.
Back in position. On your nightstand or in your go bag, wherever you normally keep it for quick access.
Oh, now for anyone with dependents.
Critical. All dependents accounted for and safe. Do a quick check.
And this next one is about you. Your own self-care.
Critical. You need to drink water, eat well if you can, use the toilet, and shower if you have the time and the situation allows, and rest when possible. Do these now, not later. You don't know when the next alert will come. Take care of yourself between alerts the way you would between shifts.
That's such a good analogy. And for children, it's even more important.
Critical. Children cannot manage their own recovery. You need to make sure they are fed, faldered, watered, toileted, or changed, cleaned, if possible, and rested. Put them down for a nap if the timing allows. Prioritize their needs immediately after the all clear, while the situation is calm.
And finally, a quick news check.
Do a brief scan of official sources. Is the situation ongoing? Has anything changed? Adjust your posture accordingly.
Right. So, you've reset. You're ready. Now, let's think about something that seems simple but needs planning. Showering during wartime.
This is a time when you're incredibly vulnerable, so you need to be prepared.
First, a news check.
Critical. Scan the situations. Make sure there are no active alerts or imminent threats in your area before you even think about stepping into the shower.
Your phone.
Critical. Your phone's volume needs to be at maximums. It must be audible over running water. And it needs to be in the bathrooms with you, or just outside the door where you can grab it instantly.
And your clothes.
Critical. Your full outfit needs to be in the bathroom with you, ready to throw on immediately, not in another room that you have to run to.
Footwear.
Critical. Closed-toe shoes right by the bathroom door. Again, ready to step into.
Your towel.
Make sure your towel is within reach for a rapid dry-off.
The bathroom door.
The bathroom door should be unlocked. You need to be able to get out quickly.
And this last point is really a summary of the whole section.
Critical. Minimize your time in the shower. You are at your most vulnerable. Be quick.
Great advice. Now, let's shift to nighttime. What do you need to do before bed to ensure a safe night's sleep, or at least a ready one?
This is your nighttime posture.
First, a news check.
Scan the situations. Assess if it's even safe to sleep at home tonight. If there's a serious escalation, you might need to consider other options.
Your phone.
Critical. Your phone needs to be charging or fully charged. It's critical that it's not in airplane mode. Do not disturb or silent mode is fine, because alert apps are designed to override those. Make sure location services are on. And double check that your HFC app has notification and override permissions.
Your clothes.
Critical. Your full outfit should be laid out by your bed, ready to throw on in seconds.
Footwear.
Critical. Closed-toe shoes right by your bed, ready to step into immediately.
Your torch.
Within arm's reach. On your nightstand, not buried deep in your go bag.
If you wear glasses.
Your glasses should be by your bed, in the same spot every night so you can find them in the dark.
Your keys.
Make sure your keys are accessible. Either by your bed or on their hook by the front door.
Your go bag.
Critical. Your go bag needs to be by the doors and verify its contents. Also, make sure your power bank is on charge.
And your exit route, even at night.
Critical. Your hallway needs to be clear. You should be able to navigate it in the dark without tripping. And your front doors needs to be able to be opened quickly, so don't double lock it if it complicates a fast exit.
And for sleeping, this is important.
Critical. No earplugs. You must be able to hear the siren and your phone alert.
And again, for dependents.
Critical. All dependents accounted for. If you have a baby, make sure they are clothed or their clothes are by their bed and their baby carrier or wrap is by the door.
That's a comprehensive check for before bed. Finally, let's talk about before leaving home during wartime. This is crucial whether you're going to work, the store, or anywhere else.
You need to be just as ready when you're outside your home as when you're inside.
Your go bag.
Critical. You are taking your go bag with you every single time you leave the house.
A news check.
Critical. Scan the situation before departure. Check the HFC app and official news sources for any active alerts or escalation in your planned route or destination area.
And shelters at your destination.
Critical. You need to have us identified the nearest shelters at your destination and along your route. Don't wait until an alert sounds to figure this out.
Do you know the time to shelter for that area?
You should know the time to shelter for your destination area. You can check this on the HFC Alerts tab at org.il.il.
Your phone again.
Critical. Your phone needs to be charged. The HFC app should be running. And location services need to be on.
If you're driving, your car fuel.
Make sure you have at least half a tank of fuel. You don't want to be caught needing to refuel during an emergency.
And finally, communication with your household.
Your destination and expected return time should be communicated to household members. They need to know where you are.
Wow, that's a lot, Herman. But it's also incredibly practical and essential.
It is. These checklists might seem like a lot at first, but they become second nature. They're about establishing routines that keep you and your loved ones safe.
Exactly. So, to recap this chapter, we've covered your daytime at home postures, making sure you're dressed, shooed, and connected. We talked about working from home responsibly, without compromising your readiness. Then the crucial reset after returning from a shelter, replenishing, and preparing for the next event. We went through the steps before showering, when you're most vulnerable. We prepared for bedtime with a solid nighttime posture, ensuring you're ready even while you sleep. And finally, everything you need to check before leaving home, so you're safe on the go.
Each of these checklists is designed to minimize risk and maximize your ability to react effectively. They are your personal readiness playbook for different moments in your day.
Absolutely. Take these to heart, practice them, and make them your routine. You'll feel more prepared, more in control, and ultimately, safer. Join us next time as we continue to build your readiness. Welcome back, everyone. In this chapter, we're going to dive into some really practical, actionable guidance notes. We'll cover everything from choosing the right go bag to what to do when an alarm sounds in the middle of the night. We'll also talk about how to behave once you're safely in your protected space, how to move to a public shelter if needed, and what to do when you start feeling that inevitable alert fatigue. And, perhaps most importantly, we'll discuss how to look after your overall wellness during what can be a very protracted and challenging time.
It's about making sure your preparations are solid, not just what's in your bag, but how you react and how you sustain yourself and your family over time.
Exactly. It's about being prepared, both physically and mentally. Let's start with your go bag.
Your go bag is a really important piece of your readiness kit. In fact, you could say it's the single most important physical item. If you choose the wrong bag, it can actually undermine everything you've carefully packed inside it. So, you need to choose carefully. This one is critical.
That makes a lot of sense, Herman. I can imagine trying to juggle things when you're in a hurry.
Precisely. You absolutely must use a backpack, not a tote bag, not a handbag, and definitely not a shopping bag. The reason is simple. You need both hands free. Think about it. You might be carrying a child, holding a torch to see where you're going, opening doors, navigating stairs in the dark, or even helping someone else. A shoulder bag or a tote will slip, it'll swing around, and it will require one of your hands to hold it in place. A backpack, on the other hand, stays securely on your back and leaves you completely free to move.
That's a great point. It's not just about carrying stuff, it's about being able to do things while you're carrying it.
Exactly. Now, what should you look for in a good go bag? First, it needs to have two shoulder straps, and they should be padded. It must sit comfortably on your back even when it's fully loaded with all your essentials. Next, look for a chest strap or a waist strap, or ideally both. These are crucial because they prevent the bag from bouncing around or shifting heavily when you need to move quickly or even run. The material should be water resistant. You might find yourself outside in the rain. A fully waterproof bag is even better, but it's not absolutely essential. Water resistant is the minimum.
Good to know. I hadn't thought about rain.
And for capacity, aim for something between 30 and 40 liters. That's usually large enough to hold your 72-hour essentials, but still small enough that you can move quickly and easily with it. This isn't a camping trip, remember. It should also have multiple compartments. You'll need to find things in the dark, possibly just by feel, and you don't want to have to dump everything out onto the floor. Things like your medications, a torch, and your phone charger should each have a known, consistent pocket where they always live.
That's smart. No fumbling around when time is critical.
Absolutely. And finally, make sure it has durable zips. This bag is going to be grabbed, it might be thrown, it might be dragged. Cheap zips will fail at the worst possible time, and that's a problem you don't want. Oh, and a dark or neutral color is best. You're not trying to be visible here. The reflective tape you've put on your checklist and on the bag handles will handle that if needed.
So, what should we definitely avoid when choosing a go bag?
Do not use tote bags, drawstring bags, or single-strap sling bags. Anything that requires a hand to carry or to keep it on your shoulder is out. Avoid wheeled luggage. It's completely useless on stairs, over rubble, or on wet ground. Don't pick a very large bag, like a 60-liter-plus hiking pack. Those are too heavy and too slow when loaded. Again, this isn't a camping trip, it's about quick, essential movement. And definitely avoid fashion bags or anything with no structure. They collapse when you set them down and are hard to pack consistently, which goes against the idea of having specific, known locations for items.
All right, so once we've picked out the perfect bag, what's next?
Once you've selected your go bag, there are a few more steps. First, affix a strip of reflective tape to the straps or the front panel. This can help you or others spot it in the dark. Next, assign each item inside a fixed pocket or location, and always, always return it there. Consistency is key for finding things quickly in an emergency. Keep it by the front door. Not in a closet, not in a bedroom. It needs to be immediately accessible as you head out. And everyone in your household should know where it is and what's inside it. This isn't just your bag, it's a household resource.
That covers the go bag really well. It's more than just a container. It's a critical piece of your emergency plan.
It absolutely is. Now, let's talk about what to do once you're in a shelter, and specifically, when it's safe to leave. This one is critical. Wait for the all clear. Do not leave your protected space until you receive an all clear notification. This notification will come from HFC, which is the Homefront Command. You'll get it via their app, through official media channels, or by hearing the specific all clear siren pattern.
So, no guessing games. You wait for clear instructions.
Exactly. What if you have no connectivity? Maybe your phone's dead, you have no signal, or the internet is down. In that situation, stay in shelter. Your default action, when you have no information, is to remain in place. Do not assume the situation is over just because it's been quiet for a few minutes. That's a dangerous assumption. If you have a battery-powered or hand-crank radio, tune it to a national station for updates. That's one of the best ways to get information when other systems are down. If you don't have a radio, wait for someone with connectivity to confirm the all clear. Or, wait until you clearly hear activity from your neighbors leaving their shelters. When in doubt, stay longer. Leaving too early is far more dangerous than staying too long.
That's a really important rule of thumb. Better safe than sorry.
Many casualties occur precisely because people leave shelter prematurely. If you cannot confirm the all clear, do not move. This is one of those times where patience can save your life.
All right. So you're in your protected space. You're waiting for the all clear. What about behavior inside the shelter, especially if you have children with you? If you have children, the most important thing is to use a calm, steady voice. Children take their cues from adults. If you are calm, they will be calmer. Explain simply. We're in our safe room. We wait here until we're told it's safe. Keep it straightforward and reassuring. Have a comfort item ready for them. It's a good idea to keep one in your mamata. That's your apartment's protected space. and another in your go bag. Distraction helps a lot. A coloring book, a small game, or a familiar song can make a big difference in keeping them settled. Hold young children close. Physical contact is incredibly reassuring for them during stressful times. And do not lie to them. Don't say nothing is happening when they can clearly hear sirens. Acknowledge it simply and then redirect to the plan. Yes, we hear the siren, and now we're in our safe room and we'll wait here together.
Those are excellent points for keeping children calm, Korn. For everyone in the shelter, there are some general rules to follow. Sit against an inner wall and keep yourself below the window line. Do not stand near windows, doors, or any exterior walls. Do not use elevators during or immediately after an alert. This is a big one. Do not go outside to look at the sky or to photograph missile interceptions. Falling debris is the primary cause of civilian injuries, and you don't want to become one of them. Keep the mamad or shelter door closed until you receive the all clear. If you smell gas or see any structural damage after an impact, move to an alternative shelter if it's safe to do so, and then call 112. That's fire and rescue. I'll repeat that, 112 for fire and rescue if you smell gas or see damage. After you get the all clear, send a brief message to your family confirming you are safe. Keep it short to avoid overloading communication networks. And do not spread unverified information about what you saw or heard. Wait for official sources to confirm details. Unverified information can cause unnecessary panic.
All very clear and practical advice. Thank you, Armin.
Now, let's talk about moving safely to a public shelter. The journey to a shelter is often one of the most dangerous moments. Many injuries happen not from the threat itself, but from falls, collisions, and panic while people are rushing to safety. So, before you even start to move, know where you're going. Hesitation in a stairwell costs precious seconds you don't have. Grab your go bag only if it's directly on your route. Do not backtrack for it. If it's not immediately there, your safety is more important. If you're carrying a child, secure them first, then move. Don't try to move and secure them at the same time.
That makes sense. Every second counts. And fumbling around can be really dangerous.
Absolutely. Now, on the stairs, this one is critical. Hold the handrail. Wet stairs, dark stairwells, and socks on tile are a fall waiting to happen. A fall on the stairs can be devastating. Do not run downstairs. Move at a fast, controlled walk. A broken ankle in the stairwell is far worse than arriving 3 seconds later. Stay to one side if others are also moving. Traffic flows faster and safer if everyone keeps to a single direction. If you are above others, do not push. If you are below and you hear someone fall, stop and help if time allows.
It's easy to forget basic courtesy and safety when you're under pressure.
It is. Once you're outside, watch the ground. Broken glass, uneven pavement, tree roots, curbs. You may be in the dark, and these are all tripping hazards. Do not run across roads without looking. Cars may still be moving, and drivers might be distracted. Wear closed-toe shoes. This is critical. Running to a shelter barefoot or in sandals is a very common way people cut their feet on debris. If you realize you cannot reach a shelter in time, enter the nearest solid building you can find, or lie flat on the ground. Do not keep running in the open. Get low, protect your head. At the shelter door itself, do not crowd the entrance. Let people with children, the elderly, and individuals with mobility limitations enter first. Once you're inside, move away from the door to make room for others coming in behind you. And do not block the entrance with your bags or your body. Keep the flow clear.
So many common injuries can be avoided just by following these steps.
They can. Common injuries on the way to shelter include falls on stairs, especially if they're wet, dark, or if you're wearing socks. Tripping on uneven ground outside is another common one. Cuts from bare feet on glass or debris are frequent. Collisions with other people or furniture in narrow hallways, and panic-related sprains from running too fast on stairs are also common, all preventable with proper care and attention.
Waking up to a night alarm, that's one of the hardest scenarios. You're groggy, disoriented, possibly in total darkness. Your reaction time is degraded, and your decision-making is impaired. This is exactly why everything we talked about in the before bed section exists, to make this moment survivable on autopilot.
It really comes down to pre-planning. Let's break down those first crucial seconds. The first 5 seconds. 1. The siren or your phone alert wakes you. Do not try to process what is happening. Just move. Your body needs to react, not think. 2. Your feet hit the floor, and you immediately slide them into your shoes. This is why they are right by the bed, in the same spot every single night. No searching. 3. Grab your glasses if you wear them. Again, same spot every night. And grab your phone. It's right there, charging.
That's incredibly fast. But it makes sense if everything is preset.
It's about eliminating decisions when you're at your worst. The next 10-20 seconds. 4. Clothes. If you sleep in clothes, which is recommended during high escalation, you can skip this step. Otherwise, pull on whatever is laid out. Speed over appearance here. A t-shirt and tracksuit bottoms are perfectly fine. 5. Grab your torch from your nightstand if the power is out. Don't waste time fumbling for light switches. 6. Move to your protected space or towards the front door if you're heading to a public shelter. The hallway should be clear because you checked it before bed. The door is not double locked because you checked that before bed too.
And for parents, what's the plan?
For parents, 7. One parent immediately goes to the child or children. The other parent grabs the go bag. These roles should be pre-assigned, as discussed in Section 5.3. 8. If you have a baby, carry them in the baby wear that's by the door. Do not stop to dress the baby. Just wrap them in whatever they're already wearing.
So, the key principles here are really about automation, right?
Exactly, Korn. The key principles are, do not think. Follow the procedure. Every decision you have to make in the dark at 3 a.m. is a decision you should have made before bed. Do not check your phone for details. The siren means go. You can read the details once you're safely in the shelter. Torch before lights. If the power is out, you need the torch. If it's on, lights help, but don't waste time looking for a switch. Prioritize the torch. And remember, it gets easier. After 2 or 3 night alarms, the routine becomes automatic. The first one is always the hardest, but with practice, your body will know what to do.
After days or even weeks of alerts, there's an enormous temptation to stop reacting properly. You might start to rationalize, thinking, it's probably nothing, or it won't land here, or I'll just stay on the sofa. This is called alert fatigue, and it's a very real and dangerous phenomenon. It kills people.
It's a natural human response, but one we absolutely must fight.
Why does it happen? Well, repeated exposure to the same stimulus naturally reduces your response. This is a normal neurological process. It's not a character flaw. Most alerts, thankfully, end without personal impact, which unfortunately reinforces the false belief that sheltering is unnecessary. Fatigue, stress, and disrupted sleep further degrade your motivation to move. And there's social pressure. If you see your neighbors not sheltering, you might feel permission to stop too. But we have to fight it. So, how do we fight alert fatigue? First, reframe every alert as if it's the first one. The one you skip could be the one that matters. There's no way to know in advance. Use the checklist mechanically. This is exactly what checklists are for. They work even when your judgment is impaired or your motivation is low. Run your PAWSBD checklist, even when it feels pointless. Keep your shoes on. This is a big one. The single biggest predictor of whether someone will shelter is whether they have to get dressed first. Stay ready. Lower the effort, not the standard. If you're exhausted, sleep in your clothes by the door. That's not giving up, that's adapting while still maintaining your protection. Talk about it. Tell your household, I'm feeling alert fatigue. Let's make a pact to keep going to shelter every single time. Remember the statistics. Civilian injuries often spike in the second and third week of conflicts, precisely when alert fatigue peaks. The threat doesn't decrease just because you're tired of it.
And if you truly, truly cannot bring yourself to move to a shelter, at minimum, get away from windows, sit against an inner wall, and protect your head. Partial compliance is better than nothing, but it should be a last resort.
That's a critical safety net, Herman, if all else fails. Finally, let's talk about wellness during protracted conflict. Wars lasting weeks or months create a cumulative physical and psychological strain that's very different from the acute stress of a single event. Readiness really includes taking care of yourself. Let's start with your physical well-being. Sleep when you can. Do not try to maintain a normal schedule. Sleep in shifts if possible. Any sleep is better than no sleep. If you can nap for 20 minutes between alerts, take it. Your body needs it. Eat regular meals. Stress often suppresses appetite. Eat anyway. Keep simple, calorie-dense food accessible, like nuts, crackers, or energy bars, for when a full meal is impossible. Drink water. Dehydration amplifies fatigue, headaches, and poor decision-making. Keep a water bottle on your person. Shower when you can. It sounds trivial, but hygiene is a huge morale multiplier. A 3-minute shower between alerts can really reset your mental state. Just remember to use your before showering checklist from section 4.3. Move your body. Even 10 minutes of stretching or walking around your flat between alerts can prevent the physical stiffness that comes from sitting in a shelter for long periods. And manage your medication. Do not let prescriptions lapse. Pharmacies might be disrupted, so maintain at least a 72-hour buffer of all essential medications at all times. Now, for your psychological well-being. Limit news consumption. Check official sources every 1 to 3 hours, as we discussed in section 3.7. But do not doom scroll. Constant news exposure increases anxiety without actually improving your safety. Maintain routines. Even small ones can be psychologically stabilizing. Your morning coffee, a meal at the table, reading to your children before bed. These small anchors help. Stay connected. Talk to family, friends, neighbors. Isolation amplifies stress. Check on elderly neighbors. They might need extra support. Acknowledge the difficulty. Saying this is hard is not a weakness. Sustained threat exposure is genuinely difficult, and it's okay to name that feeling. Watch for warning signs in yourself and your family. These can include persistent insomnia, an inability to eat, withdrawal, rage at small things, numbness, or children regressing, like bedwetting, clinginess, or nightmares. These are normal stress responses, but if they persist, reach out for help.
For psychological support, you can call ERAN at 1201, that's ERAN 122011, or NATAL at 1-800-363-363, that's NATAL 1-800-363-363. These numbers are there for you.
Thank you, Herman. Children need extra reassurance during protracted conflict. Maintain those bedtime routines. Let them talk about what they feel. Don't dismiss their fears. Validate them and then redirect. Yes, it's scary. And we have a plan, and our safe room works, and we're together. And finally, give yourself permission to function imperfectly. Productivity will be lower. Patience will be thinner. Housework will slide. That's absolutely fine. Your priority is safety, then well-being, and then everything else. On the practical side of things, rotate responsibilities with your partner or household members. One person should not be solely responsible for readiness, children, and supplies for weeks on end. Share the load. Restart proactively. Do not wait until your supplies are completely empty. When the situation is calm, go out and resupply water, food, batteries, and medications. Remember section 4.5 before leaving home. Keep a routine for your checklists. Pause bed in the morning. Situational checklists as needed. This isn't busy work. It's the structure that keeps you safe when your motivation starts to fade. That brings us to the end of this chapter. We've covered a lot of ground, from choosing your go bag to understanding shelter behavior, moving safely, handling night alarms, and combating alert fatigue. Most importantly, we've emphasized the need for self-care and wellness during what can be an incredibly challenging time. Your physical and psychological well-being are just as crucial as your emergency supplies.
Remember, preparedness isn't just about having the right gear, it's about having the right mindset and knowing the right actions to take, even when you're tired or stressed.
Exactly. Stay safe, stay prepared, and remember to look after yourselves and each other. We'll be back with more guidance in the next chapter. Welcome back, everyone. In this chapter, we're going to talk about a really important part of staying safe, how we interact with our community, how we manage information, and how we handle some specific, often challenging situations. We'll also walk through some incredibly helpful reference materials.
That's right. This section covers everything from looking out for your neighbors to understanding what information you should never share, and then gives you the hard facts on emergency contacts and how to properly use your protected spaces.
Exactly. It's all about being prepared and being a good, informed member of your community. Let's start with something close to my heart, caring for our elderly neighbors and other vulnerable people. During wartime, the folks most at risk are often those who can't easily help themselves. We're talking about elderly people living alone, those with disabilities, people with limited mobility, or anyone without a strong social network.
This isn't just about kindness, it's about community resilience. When one person is vulnerable, it affects everyone.
A very good point, Herman. So, ideally, even before any escalation during routine times, there are some really valuable steps you can take.
First, know your neighbors, especially those living alone, the elderly, or anyone with mobility limitations. If you haven't already, introduce yourself.
It's amazing what a simple hello can do to build trust.
Absolutely. Next, exchange phone numbers. A straightforward, "Can I have your number in case of emergency?" can literally save a life.
And then establish a buddy system. Agree to check on each other after every alert. This is especially critical for people who might not be able to reach a shelter independently.
Finally, offer a spare key, or at least know who holds one for them. This is crucial in case they're injured or trapped inside their home.
Now, what about during alerts themselves? When the sirens are wailing and time is short?
If you know an elderly or mobility-limited neighbor cannot reach shelter alone, check on them on your way. But, and this is important, only if it doesn't put your own household at risk. Your safety is paramount.
Right. If you find they can't move to a protected space, help them get to the safest position within their flat. That means an inner wall, away from windows and below the window line.
And after the all clear, don't forget them. Knock on their door. A simple, "Are you okay?" takes 10 seconds, but it can make all the difference.
That little check-in can mean the world. Now, if a conflict drags on, what about ongoing support during a protracted situation?
Make sure they have food, water, and medications. Elderly people might struggle to resupply themselves, especially if their mobility is limited or they feel unsafe going out.
Yes, and many might need help with technology. Ensure their phone is charged, that the Homefront Command app, the HFC app, is configured correctly. We'll talk more about that in Appendix A. And most importantly, make sure they understand how alerts work.
Offer to include them in your supply runs. "I'm going to the shops. Do you need anything?" is one of the most valuable things you can say.
It really is. It's a simple offer, but it takes a huge burden off someone's shoulders.
And if you notice they're showing signs of distress, confusion, not eating, withdrawing from others, you need to contact welfare services. Write these numbers down. The welfare ministry is ASSS, 1118s. For senior citizens, the dedicated line is 884Ws.
Those are very important contacts to have at hand. Thank you, Herman. Next up, let's talk about public shelters. These are known as Miklat Ziburish, that's Jiburish de Ziburish, Storijash, Storijdash, or Institutional Protected Spaces, a MAMAM. These are there for buildings and neighborhoods that don't have private MAMADs. The key here is to familiarize yourself with them before you need them.
This one is critical. The Homefront Command maintains information about public shelters and their locations. Check the HFC app or visit orf.org.il for the most current and authoritative information about shelters in your area. The guidance we're giving you now supplements, but does not replace, official HFC instructions.
So, how do you go about finding your shelters?
First, use the HFC app to locate nearby shelters. Second, ask your building committee or Va'ad Bayit, your neighbors, or your municipality. And third, physically walk to your nearest three shelters and verify you can access them. We covered this briefly in Section 3.7, but it bears repeating.
Access can sometimes be a bit tricky, can't it? What are some common issues people run into?
Many public shelters are locked. Find out who holds the key. Is it the building committee, the municipality, or a designated key holder? Some shelters have restricted hours or require a code. And unfortunately, some are used as storage and may be partially blocked. If you find that, report it to your municipality.
And if the shelter is locked during an alert and you can't reach the keyholder?
The municipality emergency line, 1006 to 1029, may be able to help.
Okay, so once you're inside, what about etiquette and safety in communal shelters? It can be a crowded, stressful environment.
When you get inside, make space. Move to the back or sides to allow others in. Remember, children, the elderly, pregnant women, and people with disabilities have priority access.
And please, keep the noise down. Everyone is frightened. Loud phone calls and arguments will only increase panic.
If someone arrives without supplies, share what you can. Water, a phone charger, a blanket. These small gestures make a difference.
Do not bring large items that block floor space. Your go bag is fine, but a suitcase is not.
Pets. Many public shelters do not allow animals. Check in advance. If your shelter doesn't, you need to have an alternative plan.
And hygiene is important. Shelters can be crowded and poorly ventilated. If you prefer, wear a mask. An N95 from your go bag is a good idea. And always wash your hands when you leave.
If you have children with you, bring something for them to do. Long waits in a concrete room are tough on kids.
Right. After the all clear, what's the protocol?
Take all your belongings with you. Report any damage or maintenance issues to the municipality. If the shelter was dirty, locked improperly, or unusable, report it. You're not just complaining, you're improving it for next time.
That's a great way to think about it. Herman, this next section is incredibly important for everyone to understand. It's about OPSEC, or Operation Security and Information Discipline. During wartime, what you share online can truly endanger lives, including your own.
This is not a drill. What you post can be used by the enemy in real time.
So, let's start with what you should never share.
Do not share exact locations of impacts or landings. Not on WhatsApp, not on X, not on Telegram, not on Instagram stories. Enemy forces monitor social media in real time to calibrate their targeting. A photo of where it landed near my house tells them exactly where to aim next.
That's a chilling thought.
It's reality. Also, do not share locations of military or emergency service activity. That includes troop movements, ambulance staging areas, Iron Dome battery positions, or emergency service response times.
And photos or videos of damage.
If they reveal identifiable locations like street signs, building numbers, or landmarks, do not share them. And this is both an OPSEC issue and a basic human decency issue. Do not share information about casualties before families have been notified.
So, that's what not to share. What about what not to believe? There's so much misinformation out there.
Do not believe unverified reports on X, Telegram, or WhatsApp groups. These platforms are flooded with misinformation during conflict, some accidental, some deliberate. Adversaries actively seed false information to cause panic, misdirect, and demoralize.
It's a psychological weapon.
Exactly. Do not believe breaking news from accounts you don't recognize. Wait for official confirmation. And do not believe dramatic claims, like massive attack incoming, ceasefire confirmed, or city evacuated, that don't come from official sources like the IDF spokesperson, the HFC, Israel police, or established media outlets.
And those screenshots of alerts that get forwarded around.
Do not trust screenshots of alerts from unverified sources. Real HFC alerts come through the app and official channels, not WhatsApp forwards.
So, what should we do?
Get your information from official sources, the HFC app, the IDF spokesperson, Israel police, and established news outlets like Khan, Ynet, or Times of Israel.
And before you share anything?
Check before you share. Ask yourself, is this from a verified official source? Could sharing this endanger someone? Is it actually useful?
That's a great filter to apply. And if you see friends or family sharing sensitive location information, what should you do?
Tell them to delete it. Be direct. Delete that. It shows where it landed. Is not rude. It's responsible. Report disinformation to platform moderation where possible.
And Herman, you mentioned that even positive unverified rumors can be harmful.
Yes. Even well-intentioned sharing like, they shot down everything, we're fine, is harmful. It creates false security and undermines trust in real information. Even well-intentioned sharing can be lethal, OPSEC. When in doubt, don't post.
That's a very stark but necessary reminder. Thank you, Herman. Now, let's talk about something called a preliminary guideline. This is known in Hebrew as Hatra Makdimak. Makdimak.
This system provides a 3 to 5 minute advance warning before the actual red alert siren sounds.
So, what does it actually mean when you get one of these notifications?
You will receive a notification via the HFC app before the siren sounds. The preliminary guideline does not require you to enter a shelter immediately. It means prepare. Put shoes on, locate your phone, know where you're going. Be ready to move the moment the actual alert sounds.
It's like a heads up that something is coming. So, what should you do when you get that preliminary guideline?
If you're at home, ensure your shoes, keys, phone, and go bag are in position. Move children to a central area. Be ready. If you're driving, start looking for a solid building to pull over near. Do not stop on a bridge or in a tunnel.
And if you're on a bus or train?
The train may slow to 30 kilometers per hour, and passengers may be asked to bend below the window line. Follow the crew's instructions. If you're outside with children, identify the nearest shelter or solid building. Gather the children close to you.
So, the preliminary guideline buys you preparation time.
Exactly. Use it. When the actual alert sounds, follow standard shelter procedure, which we'll cover in Appendix D. This is a different protocol from rocket or missile response. Do not follow the standard shelter procedure. This is for when you hear an infiltration alert or suspect a terror event.
This is a very serious situation.
It is. First, enter the nearest building immediately. Second, lock the door. Use a heavy object to barricade it if needed. Third, turn all lights off. Stay in darkness. Fourth, stay silent. Turn off the TV, radio, and anything that makes noise. Fifth, sit below the window line. Stay away from windows and exterior walls.
And online?
Do not share your location on social media. Attackers monitor social media in real time. Do not open the door for anyone except identified security forces.
This is one of the most critical points, isn't it? Even if you hear a rocket alert during an infiltration, you said the protocol is different.
Yes. If a rocket alert sounds during an infiltration, stay where you are. Do not leave to go to a stairwell or shelter. Remaining locked and hidden takes priority over the standard shelter protocol. You must wait for security forces to announce the all clear. This may take hours. Do not assume it is safe because it has been quiet.
What about the mamad door during an infiltration?
Do not remove the mamadded door handle to prevent entry. This damages the mechanism and you'll need that door to function properly later. Instead, use a heavy object to block the door from the inside.
And for those who are licensed weapon holders?
Aim at the front door. Fire only on positive identification of a threat. Do not fire blindly through doors or walls.
This is incredibly serious information. Just to reiterate, these infiltration protocols are so critical that we'll be going into them in much greater detail in Chapter 6. But this brief overview gives you the immediate actions. Herman, for our observant Jewish listeners, there are some special considerations for Shabbat and Haggah holidays.
That's right. During these times, traditional restrictions on electricity and technology are often observed. However, the preservation of life, or pikuach nefesh, always takes precedence. Here are some preparations.
First, regarding Channel 14, or Gao Shacket, that's the silent wave system.
Make sure it's playing and verify the TV isn't muted. This system broadcasts alerts without sound, so you can see them visually without violating Shabbat.
And your emergency radio?
Verify the frequency and operation. Do a volume test. Make sure the device is on full volume. And check the power supply. Ensure it's AC connected or has sufficient batteries. This is your lifeline if other communications are down and you can't use your phone.
Finally, Shabbat supplies.
If you might need to go to a shelter, pack them beforehand.
Excellent advice. Now, let's dive into some of our reference appendices. First up, Appendix A, which covers configuring the Homefront Command app, specifically for Android users. This app is your direct link to critical alerts and information.
This app is essential. Here's a checklist to make sure it's set up correctly.
That's a lot of technical detail, but it's all really important to make sure the app works when you need it most. Appendix B is one of the most vital sections in this entire guide. Emergency numbers. These are the contacts you simply must have.
Do not skip this section. Write these down.
Mogan David Adam, or MDA, for injuries, first aid, and medical emergencies.
Dial 21 points. That's 1001 for MDA. Their SMS number is SMS number 0121 points.
For fire and rescue, including fires, trapped persons, or structural collapse,
dial 202. Again, 202 for fire and rescue. Their SMS is 050-596-0735.
The Electric Corporation. For power outages or electrical hazards,
dial 203. That's 1003. Their SMS is 055-7001-73.
For the Homefront Command itself, for guidelines, alerts, and emergency information,
dial SA-24, again, 24. Their SMS is AZO-52-921-4124.
For your municipality, for local information and municipal assistance,
the numbers vary slightly, but generally it's 2006-2006-109s. Check your local municipality's exact number.
And for police information, like roadblocks or general police hotlines,
that's E100.
Now, we also have a list of support and welfare numbers, which are just as important for different kinds of emergencies.
For the Welfare Ministry, for general information and assistance, dial F118s.
That's a comprehensive list. And Herman, you have one final, very important point about these numbers.
Yes? You must have a printed copy of these emergency numbers posted at home, perhaps on your fridge or near the front door, and also in your go bag. Do not rely on phone contacts alone. Your phone might run out of battery, get damaged, or you might not be able to access it.
That's a crucial point. Thank you. Next, Appendix C. How to inspect your mom and that's your apartment's protected space. This is based on Homefront Command guidelines for residential protected spaces.
We'll start with the structural inspection of your mamada.
That's a thorough structural check. Now, what about the contents and safety inside the mamad?
First, flammable or hazardous materials. There should be none. Do not store any flammable, hazardous, or toxic materials inside your mamadak.
So, the mamad is for protection, not for daily living, beyond sleeping if it's properly ventilated. That makes sense. This next appendix is a decision tree for when a SRED alert sounds. It's a step-by-step guide to help you choose the highest priority option you can reach within the time available.
This is critical. When a red alert sounds, go to your protected space.
That's a very important distinction about the siren duration. So, Herman, let's walk through this decision tree. A red alert sounds. What's the first question we ask?
First, do you have a mamada, a mamak, or a mamam? Or a mamam.
If the answer is yes,
then that is PIRD1, your mamada. Close the blast door, turning the handle 90 degrees. Close both the steel and glass windows. Sit against an inner wall. And then wait for the all clear.
Okay, but what if you do not have a mamad, mamak, or mamam?
Then you ask the second question. Can you reach a shelter within the time available? This means a building shelter or a public shelter, a miklat.
And if the answer is YE,
then that is PIRD2, a shelter. Enter and close the door. Then wait for the all clear.
What if you cannot reach a shelter within the time available?
Then you ask the third question, does your building have an inner stairwell with no windows or exterior walls? That's a Ikadar Madrigodak.
If the answer is YES,
then that is PIRD3, the stairwell. Stay in the center, not on the top floor, not on the ground floor. Stay on the staircase itself, not in the hallway. And then wait for the all clear.
What if your building does not have an inner stairwell like that?
Then you ask the fourth question. Is there an inner room in your home with maximum walls and minimum windows?
If the answer is yes,
then that is PIRD4, an inner room. Sit against an inner wall below the window line. Do not face the door, close all doors, and then wait for the all clear.
And Herman, what if you don't have any of those options? No mamad, no shelter, no inner stairwell, no inner room?
Then that is PIRD5, your last resort. Lie flat on the ground, protect your head with your hands, and then wait for the all clear.
Those are very clear steps. And Herman, you have a list of what are not valid protected spaces.
That's right. Kitchens, bathrooms, toilets, building entrance lobbies, caravans, or prefab structures, and any areas with ceramics, porcelain, or glass that could shatter are not valid protected spaces.
Very specific, very important. Now for Appendix E, our Hebrew glossary. Knowing these key terms can save critical seconds. You'll hear these words on the news, in alerts, and from your neighbors.
I'll read the Hebrew term, its transliteration, and its meaning.
Thank you, Herman. That's a really valuable resource. A final appendix in this chapter is Appendix F, Emergency Radio Frequencies. If your phone and internet are down, a battery-powered or hand-crank AM Mind radio is your lifeline for information. You should preset these frequencies.
These are the stations to tune into.
Herman, any important notes on these frequencies?
Yes. FM frequencies can vary by region. The frequencies I just gave you are approximate, so scan nearby if you don't get a signal.
That's fantastic advice. Having that radio preset and clearly marked could truly be a lifesaver. Well, that brings us to the end of Chapter 5. We've covered a lot of ground, from making sure our vulnerable neighbors are safe, to understanding how to use public shelters. We've also gone deep into the critical importance of information discipline, what not to share, and what sources to trust.
And we've given you the essential preliminary guidelines, the specific protocol for infiltration events, and special considerations for Shabbat. Crucially, we've walked through all the reference appendices, how to set up your HFC app, a comprehensive list of emergency numbers, how to inspect your Mamada, and the decision tree for siren response.
And of course, the Hebrew glossary and emergency radio frequencies. The key takeaway from this chapter is that preparedness extends beyond your own four walls. It's about being connected to your community, being responsible with information, and having all those vital reference points at your fingertips.
Be informed. Be prepared.
Exactly. Join us next time for Chapter 6, where we'll delve even deeper into specific infiltration protocols. Stay safe, everyone. Welcome, friends, to Chapter 6 of our Wartime Readiness Field Guide. This is our final chapter, and we're covering some of the most serious and immediate protocols from the Homefront Command.
That's right, Korn. This chapter deals with infiltration events, specifically hostile aerial vehicles and ground-based terrorist infiltrations. These are situations where knowing what to do and doing it immediately can be the difference.
Absolutely. We'll walk you through the official guidelines for both types of events, explaining how you'll receive the alerts and what actions to take, whether you're indoors, outdoors, or on the move.
Let's start with a hostile aerial vehicle infiltration. This means something like a drone entering Israeli airspace. The Homefront Command has specific capabilities to identify these threats and issue life-saving alerts.
And knowing how these alerts come in and what to do is truly vital.
When a hostile aerial vehicle is detected, you'll receive an infiltration of a hostile aerial vehicle alert. This isn't a drill. It means you need to act immediately.
So, what's the first thing we should do, Herman?
You must go to the most protected space available to you. That means your mamad, your apartment's protected space, or a mamak, a mamam, a public shelter, an inner stairwell, or any inner room that offers the most protection.
And once we're there?
Stay in that protected space for 10 minutes. That's the baseline. Unless you receive another alert or a specific updated guideline, 10 minutes is your minimum.
Got it. 10 minutes. Now, how will we know if one of these hostile aerial vehicles is infiltrating? How do we get that alert?
There are several ways, and it's good to be familiar with all of them. The first is through the Homefront Command app.
The app. We've talked about this before. It's such a powerful tool.
It is. The app provides a personal mobile alert based on your exact location. For this to work, your location services on your phone must be activated.
And you can also set it up to receive alerts for 10 other areas you're interested in, like where your family lives or your workplace.
Exactly. When an alert comes through the app, you'll see a caption on your screen that says infiltration of a hostile aerial vehicle, along with specific guidelines. A short alarm will sound, followed by an announcement.
And the app is multilingual, right? For those who prefer it, you can get these alerts in Hebrew, English, Russian, or Arabic.
That's correct. And for those who are deaf or hard of hearing, there's a special solution. You can set the app to receive alerts via a 10-second vibration and a flashlight indicator. This is a critical accessibility feature.
That's excellent. What other ways will we get the alert?
The National Emergency Portal is another option. If you have the website open on your computer and have defined your alert areas, you can receive a targeted alert there.
And the sirens? Will we hear the sirens for this?
Yes. The Homefront Command sirens will also sound. It's the same rising and falling alarm that you hear for rocket and missile attacks. So, if you hear that siren, you need to react.
And of course, the media will carry the alert too.
Yes, national and regional radio stations will broadcast a designated sound, followed by an announcement of the affected area and the guidelines. You'll also see these alerts on TV channels and news websites.
So, if we get any of these alerts, Herman, what are the life-saving guidelines we need to follow? Let's break it down by where we might be.
Good idea, Korn. Let's start if you are inside a building.
Okay. Inside a building.
Immediately enter the most protected space. Again, that's your mamad. Mamak, mamam, a shelter, an inner stairwell, or any inner room that provides the most protection. And stay there for 10 minutes, unless you receive another alert or updated guideline.
Simple, clear instructions. What if we're outdoors when the alert hits?
If you are outdoors, the guidelines depend on your surroundings. If you're in a built-up area, your goal is to get into the optimal protected space in a nearby building. Do not stay in the entrance hall. Get inside a proper protected space.
And if you're in an open area with no buildings around?
In an open area, you need to lie on the ground and protect your head with your hands. If for some reason you can't lie down, then crouch as low as possible and still protect your head with your hands.
And for both built-up and open areas outdoors?
You wait there until an explicit guideline is given that allows you to leave the protected position.
That makes sense. What about those of us who might be driving a vehicle when an alert comes in?
If you are driving a vehicle, you need to stop at the side of the road. Exit the vehicle immediately and enter the optimal protected space in a nearby building.
So, leave the car and find a building.
Yes. If a building cannot be reached quickly, then you still need to exit your vehicle, but then move away from it. Get beyond the shoulder of the road or the safety railing, lie on the ground, and protect your head with your hands.
So, get away from the vehicle itself if you can't get to a building.
That's right. Only if you absolutely cannot exit the vehicle for some reason, then pull over, open all the windows, and crouch below the window line. This is a last resort.
And just like being outdoors, you wait for an explicit all clear, correct?
Precisely. Wait until an explicit guideline is given allowing you to leave.
What about public transport? Buses, trains?
On public transport, the guidelines vary slightly. If you're on an inner city or school bus, the driver will stop at the side of the road and open the doors. Passengers should crouch below the window line and protect their heads.
And urban buses?
For an urban bus, the driver will stop and open the doors so passengers can enter an optimal protected space nearby. If that's not possible, then passengers should crouch below the window line.
And trains?
If you're on a train, the driver will slow the train down to 30 kilometers per hour. Passengers should then crouch below the window line in their carriages and protect their heads.
Thank you, Herman, for breaking down those hostile aerial vehicle protocols. It's important to remember that these are immediate actions for a specific type of threat.
Yes, and now we need to talk about a different but equally serious type of infiltration. This is a terrorist infiltration event on the ground.
This is a scenario that requires a very different response, isn't it? Because the threat is on the ground, and potentially very close.
Exactly. This one is critical, Korn. During a terrorist infiltration event, you must immediately enter a protected space, but the guidelines here are distinct from an aerial threat.
Let's go through these carefully. What if we are indoors during a terrorist infiltration?
If you are indoors, listen very carefully to these steps. First, lock your house door.
That seems obvious, but it's important to state it clearly.
It is. Second, leave the lights on outside the house. This can help security forces identify areas of concern.
Okay, lights on outside. Then, what's our primary move inside?
Immediately enter your protected room, your mamad. Close the door properly, sealing it, and sit below the window line. This is your safest place.
What if someone doesn't have a mamad?
If there is no protected room, then enter a hideaway. This is a secure inner room, as far as possible from external walls and windows, where you can conceal yourself.
And once we're in that protected space or hideaway?
You do not exit that protected space until you receive an official message from the authorities that the event has ended. This is not a 10-minute wait. This is until an official all-clear is given.
That's a key difference from the aerial vehicle protocol. Stay put until you get the official word.
Absolutely. Now, if you are outdoors during a terrorist infiltration event...
Outdoors? What do we do?
Immediately enter a protected place and stay there. This could be a building, a secure room, anything that offers immediate protection and concealment.
And like indoors, you wait for the all clear?
Yes. Wait until you receive a message from the official authorities that the event has ended. Do not venture out until then.
What about being in a vehicle during a terrorist infiltration, Herman?
If you are in a vehicle, if you can continue driving and it's safe to do so, get to a safe location nearby as soon as possible. Drive away from the immediate area of danger if you can.
But what if driving away isn't an option?
If it's not possible to drive to safety, then stop your vehicle on the side of the road. Seek shelter nearby that provides maximum protection. This might mean getting out and finding a building or a sturdy barrier.
And again, the waiting game begins.
Yes. Stay in that shelter until you receive a message from officials that the event has ended.
Herman, you mentioned some critical reminders for infiltration events. Let's make sure everyone hears these loud and clear.
These are absolutely vital, Korn. Do not skip these. First, during an infiltration event, traffic in the affected area is prohibited, and entry into the area is prohibited until further notice. This is for your safety and to allow security forces to operate.
That's a serious warning.
It is. Next, this one is extremely important. If you receive a rocket or missile alert during a terrorist infiltration event, do not go to a protected space located outside your house, including the stairwell. Stay locked inside your house.
Wow! That's a crucial distinction. Even if it's a rocket alert, if there's a ground infiltration, you stay put inside.
Yes. Your primary threat in that moment is the infiltration. Stay locked inside your home. Do not go out to the stairwell or an external shelter.
What about the mama door? We heard about not dismantling the handle for some reason.
That's right, Korn. This one is also critical. Do not dismantle the protected room, your mama door handle. Removing the handle actually damages the mechanism and can compromise its protection. To block entry from outside, barricade the handle with a heavy object instead.
So, don't mess with the door itself, just block it.
Exactly. And another critical reminder, do not share your location on social networks or media channels during an event like this. This information can be used by hostile forces.
That's a modern threat we all need to be aware of.
Finally, stay updated through the Homefront Command's official platforms and media channels. Only trust official sources for information and instructions.
Thank you, Herman, for walking us through these incredibly important, life-saving protocols. This chapter really highlights the differences in response needed for different types of threats.
It's about being prepared for what might come and knowing the specific actions that can keep you safe.
Absolutely. And with that, we've reached the end of our wartime readiness field guide. It's been a journey through preparedness, resilience, and actionable steps.
Remember, this guide is a tool, but your awareness and immediate action are your best defenses.
That's right. The most important takeaway from all of this is to stay informed, stay calm, and follow the official instructions from the Homefront Command. Please, if you haven't already, download the Homefront Command app to your phone. It is truly your most direct link to life-saving alerts and information.
And keep this guide accessible. Print it out, keep it with your emergency supplies, and review it periodically.
We hope that by listening to this guide, you feel more prepared, more confident, and more capable of protecting yourself and your loved ones. Our wish is for peace and security for everyone. Thank you for joining us on this important journey. Stay safe, stay strong, and stay resilient.